Well, it's so good to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Peter Schiff from Euro-Pacific Capital. Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Thanks for having me back.
You know, I wonder if we could start off with the ECB. You know, last week they had what some folks are calling a surprise rate cut down to the lowest level in history, at least for a major central bank, roughly negative 0.1%, charging people to take their money.
I mean, that's the official deposit rate for banks. It's not, you know, it's not like for individuals that open up a savings account. They're not getting charged. So it's a small amount of money that is impacted. And it wasn't really a surprise. I mean, it was pretty much expected by the markets. In fact, when the ECB came out with that announcement, the euro actually rallied because people had been anticipating it. But, of course, it's bullish for gold. The fact that the Europeans are promising lower interest rates for longer, the fact that the number one concern on European central bankers' minds is that inflation is too low, and their goal is to create more inflation than they already have. Meantime, you know, oil prices this week have broken out to a new year high in terms of euros. So, you know, there already is inflation there, and the policy now is to create even more inflation, and they will succeed. I mean, that's the one thing governments can actually succeed at, and that's creating inflation. And so that's bullish. There are more reasons for Europeans to buy gold. You know, we've got 0% rates. The Fed isn't even talking about an exit strategy anymore. They have no intention of unwinding their balance sheet. It's still expanding. Meanwhile, you know, we printed a negative 1% for first quarter GDP. They're probably going to end up revising that even lower. It could be closer to 2%. And look, this is not the weather. The weather is responsible for some of the weakness, but not all of it. And I think going into the second half of the year, people are going to be surprised by how weak the economy is. And that's going to, you know, take all this taper talk, you know, out of the picture. The Fed's going to come back. Yellen's going to come back screaming for more QE. And, you know, the gold market's got to take off sometime between now and then.
How big of a factor are rates? You know, we've seen rates down at historically low levels. Do you believe the markets have essentially factored in higher rates?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're anticipating an end at some point to the QE and a normalization of rates. The bond market hasn't factored that in, but I think the currency markets have. I think even the gold market has. I think they're pricing in a tighter monetary policy that's never going to happen. At least not until after we have a dollar collapse. So I think that even though rates have been low for a long time, it's the anticipation, the false anticipation that rates would go up that has really undermined gold recently and supported the dollar. But I think when investors come to realize that they had it wrong, that the Fed is not going to be tightening, that it can't tighten because it has this phony recovery, they've inflated a bubble and they don't want to prick it, they want to just keep the air in it, then people are going to have to quickly reposition themselves in the gold market. They're going to basically reprice everything. And I think the problem that the traders are going to have is buying back the gold they sold, particularly if they sold it short, because the supply just isn't there. A lot of the gold that was dumped into the marketplace since the beginning, the middle of last year, a lot of that gold is now buried deep in some Chinese vault or someplace like that. It's not coming back to the market. I mean, there are people that bought gold, you know, at 1300 or 1400. They ain't selling it. I mean, they bought it to keep it, not to trade it.
A lot of that gold, it just disappears now. I mean, once it crosses into China's border through Hong Kong, it essentially cannot leave the borders, even though they are now officially the world's largest consumer and producer of the yellow metal.
I think unofficially, who knows how much gold they own, because I don't believe the numbers that they put out, that they publish, because according to their official published numbers, they haven't bought any gold in 5 years.
No, clearly the number one importer is, as you know, India had to curtail imports due to the balance of payments issues there. on the rupee. You know, we had some surprisingly solid numbers, at least according to their metrics last week. We're seeing the numbers beat most economists' forecast, increase in jobs and low unemployment rate around 6%. Are these numbers bogus, or is it just that so many people have dropped out of the labor force that it looks like we're going back to work?
You're right in that the labor force participation rate is still near its 35-year low of, I think it's 62.8. And, you know, the number of jobs we created, I mean, 200,000 or 210, I mean, that's not a lot of jobs, especially coming off of the winter slowdown, all the cold weather. Supposedly we were going to get a big snapback in the spring. And, you know, that's all the snapback we got. In fact, the May number is significantly lower than the April number, which to me shows deceleration, not acceleration. And again, you know, the biggest growth was in healthcare, education, you know, lower paying service sector type jobs, part-time jobs. We actually lost information technology jobs. Manufacturing jobs only gained a little bit, as did construction. I mean, construction only had, I think, 5,000 or 6,000 jobs. I mean, that's not much. If we're supposed to get a big boom in the housing sector in the spring, why do we have such a big drop-off? Because I think in the prior month, in March, or April rather, it was like 30,000 construction. So things seem to be slowing down. You know, meanwhile, the cost of living is going up. You know, so people aren't earning more money, but it's certainly they have to spend a lot more money just to survive.
We're seeing increases in costs across, you know, the spectrum. And my guess is you're going to expect, you know, that folks need to be preparing now for higher prices down the road.
Look, I mean, cattle prices in the last 10 days or so are up 5% to new all-time record highs. I mean, that's what's going on. And when I went to pay my bill, they had jacked up the price by 25% since my last cut. You know, I mean, and I think that I've been saying paying the same price for the last few years, I can't remember exactly when they raised it last, but let's say it was 2 or 3 years ago. If they jump it up 25%, you know, that's a lot, you know, even if you amortize it over a few years. But, and I'm sure I'm not the, you know, I don't have the only barber that's raising prices. And it's not just haircuts that are getting more expensive. I mean, everything is getting more expensive. I mean, you know, that's just what's going on. Meanwhile, you know, we have articles about consumer credit surging. People are using credit cards more now. I think it's because they need credit cards to buy groceries. You know, they used to have the cash. Now they can't afford it. So they're relying on debt because you look at the department store sales, they're weak. So if Americans are borrowing all this money, you know, where are they spending it? At the grocery store.
Yeah, Amazon.com, right. If you look at the bigger picture, though, still have a huge number of people approaching 50 million on food stamp debit cards. If that system, if that was not available, I mean, clearly there would be bread lines, soup kitchens, and things of that nature all over the country.
The only reason that is available is because we can keep, you know, adding to the deficit. The government can keep borrowing money. I mean, the food stamps are like part of the money supply. The government is just printing money and giving it to people, only they're not printing dollars. They're printing, you know, food stamps through these EBT debit cards. But, yeah, I mean, imagine if people didn't have the food stamps. How would they eat?
Okay, let's talk about where you see the metals going from here. You know, it started off a fantastic year, 2014. We've had some sluggishness lately and starting to show signs of life once again.
Yeah, you know, kind of a typical, you know, the year began, everybody was negative, everybody was expecting gold to fall down to 1,000, and instead it immediately went the other way, surprised everybody, went up to 1,300 and change. And then, of course, you know, you had all the people that were so negative on gold in December coming into the year. Once they got the rally, they were even more negative. That this is a phony rally, it's a dead cat bounce, you got to sell it. And we did get a sell-off. I do think that, the shorts and the bears still had the upper hand, and they were able to cut that rally short. But oftentimes when you put in a low, you have to retest it and form a better low before heading higher. And I think that's what we've done not only in gold but in the mining stocks. In fact, gold had its low back in July of last year. We retested that low in December, and this most recent move down, so far we haven't been able to revisit either the December low or the July low, and now we're turned back up again. And if you look at the gold stocks, they've actually made a head and shoulders pattern where they made a new low in December. So the December low in the gold stock index was lower than the July low. The gold itself kind of double bottomed. It didn't make a new low, but the gold stocks made a new low. They took out the July low. And now if you look at the most recent decline in the gold stocks, they have matched the July low from last year, but they haven't come down to the December low. And so now you're in the process of forming the right shoulder of a head and shoulders bottom in the gold stocks. Meanwhile, the gold bullion never even made that new low when the stocks did. But I think if we can continue to see a rally in the gold stocks and complete this head and shoulders pattern, we haven't completed it yet. I mean, we're still trying to form it, and so there's no guarantee that the pattern will complete. But if it does, I think this is going to be the bottom for gold and for gold stocks, much better than having just a V bottom if we had just gone down and not retested it. Because I think trying to retest a low and then not being able to make new lows and then coming back, you know, makes for a much stronger, more reliable bottom where you can be more confident that we're not going back down there again.
No, exactly. I mean, if we look at the charts all the way back to 2001, you might remember the XAU made a series of inverted head and shoulders patterns, which essentially set the stage for a multi-year, you might even say decade-long rally. Let's talk a little bit about repatriation of gold, you know, from some of the major coffers, stockpiles. Now, we've seen this trend pick up some momentum. Started off with Hugo Chavez before he passed away, and then it picked up some momentum. We're seeing Switzerland was one of the next ones, Germany, as well as Poland. Many of these countries are demanding their gold back from Paris, London, and, of course, New York.
And with good reason, because what if the gold's not there? What if it's been loaned into the market? You know, you want to get your gold first, not last, because, you know, if you get it last, you might not get it at all. And especially, you know, the U.S. has been really, you know, with sanctions against Russia or talking about it, and the way the U.S. has been going after foreign banks. Look at this huge fine, $10 billion fine they want to assess on BNP Paribas. We're really trying to flex our muscle as a result of the dollar being the reserve currency and the fact that, you know, the dollar is involved in so many transactions that I think foreigners and foreign countries might be getting nervous about what America is doing and want to insulate themselves from this type of aggressive behavior on the part of the U.S. government. And so for that reason, you could see foreign countries trying to de-dollarize, trying to cut back the number of transactions that happen in dollars so that we don't have as much power by threatening to, you know, kick them out of the dollar system. And, of course, another a vulnerability, you know, another lever or hammer that we might have for somebody is if we have their gold. If we can say, well, we're not going to give you your gold because you did something we didn't like. So given that, you know, our proclivity to do this stuff, I can see a lot of nations saying, hey, I don't want to take that chance. I don't want to have this hanging over my head. Let me get my gold out of the U.S. now because I want to take that leverage away from the U.S. To try to force us to do something. The main thing that I think people should take away is that the economy is not experiencing the robust recovery that the Fed had forecast and that many had thought was baked into the cake. I think that the Fed is going to have to be downwardly revising its estimates for the second half of 2014 GDP and going forward. And I think we're going to see a new, more dovish Yellen coming out and trying to come up with a new stimulus, especially, you know, after we're going to get past these midterm elections. But you're going to try to have the president and, of course, the Fed trying to do everything it can to try to artificially stimulate the economy going into those elections, maybe to help the incumbents get reelected or to help Hillary if she's the nominee, because they generally, you know, try to help the incumbent. And even though there's no incumbent, the sitting president is a Democrat, and therefore, you know, Hillary being, you know, a former Secretary of the Treasury, it's almost like an incumbent. It's kind of like the handoff, and the central banks generally try to facilitate that, especially somebody like Janet Yellen, who is clearly a Democrat, has been a Democrat, appointed by Obama, certainly looking to be reappointed by Hillary Clinton, knowing that if a Republican wins, she may very well not get reappointed. So she's going to be doing what she can to, you know, and all she thinks she can do is print money. So I think this new wave of easy money is going to take people by surprise. They shouldn't be surprised. This is obvious. You know, it's like, you know, a Category 5 tornado, I mean, hurricane, that, you know, it's right off the coast, and somehow all the weathermen don't see it. You know, they think it's sunny. But, you know, eventually, you know, you're going to know the hurricane is there because you're going to be in the middle of it. But in the meantime, before everybody figures this out, buy your gold. You know, buy your silver. Get ready. You know, don't worry if it goes a little lower. You know, just get into the market. And, you know, I've got my gold company, Euro Pacific Precious Metals, shiftgold.com. People are interested in buying gold. They should go there. You know, we just made news recently because we just started accepting Bitcoin. For people who have Bitcoin that would rather have gold and silver, they can now go to my company and use BitPay to exchange their Bitcoins for gold and silver. I don't know. I think we've had, you know, maybe about close to a dozen or so people by now who have done it. I mean, it's not big, but, you know, more and more people are now starting to do that, which is something that I would recommend for people that have Bitcoin, that they get at least some gold and silver.
This rise in equities that we've seen over the past several years after a decade-long bear market, or at least consolidation in the general equities market, during that period, you know, gold and silver outperformed almost every other asset class. Is it going to take a top in the equities market to bring investors strongly back into the precious metals sector?
I mean, if you look at the rally that gold had, let's say from the, you know, 2000 period through 2008, gold was rallying, and so were the stock market. I mean, since, you know, the stock market bottomed in, what was it, 2002 or so, the stock market rallied. It just didn't rally as much as gold. Gold was rallying faster than stocks, and I would expect that situation can reemerge where the stock market continues to trend up, albeit at a slower pace than it was in 2013. I mean, so far, the market is creeping higher here in 2014, but it's still in an upward trend, although most stocks are actually going down. So that's where the broader averages can be a bit deceiving, because I think more stocks are down this year than up. But the Dow is up, the S&P is up, you know, overall. But, you know, it's not off to the races. But I think that inflation is what's ultimately going to be the driver. That's what's driving stocks. It's not earnings. It's not the strong economy. It's a weakening currency. It's inflation. And in an inflation-driven rally, clearly gold is going to have an edge over, you know, the stock market. Gold is going to do better in an inflationary environment. It's just that people don't think we have an inflationary environment. That's what's keeping gold down. In fact, everybody is saying we don't have enough inflation. Inflation is too low. But, you know, the central banks and the governments normally have it wrong. Remember when we had a housing bubble, they said there is no housing bubble. You know, they had it completely wrong. Well, they think they have a deflation problem. They don't. They have an inflation problem. Deflation would be a solution. That would be relief for the economy. We don't have that. We have inflation. The government doesn't want to admit it. They want to pretend it's too low. They're going to create more. And pretty soon, it's not going to be people talking about not enough inflation. They're going to be talking about too much inflation. But the problem is there's nothing the Fed can do about it. Yes, if they think there's not enough inflation, they can clearly create more. But how do they stop inflation if there's too much? They can't raise interest rates when the economy is so levered up and unemployment is still so high. So the government really doesn't have the tools to fight inflation. They pretend that they do, or maybe they do, but they're reluctant to use them because of what it would do to the banking system, the stock market, the real estate market, government finances. So when people appreciate the box that the Fed is in, that we have an inflation problem and it's going to get worse because the central banks can't do anything about it, then you have the perfect storm for gold.
You did mention the housing sector. You talk about a housing bubble. Some folks are calling this latest 20-30% bounce in the domestic median home price the housing bubble part two, or a mini bubble. I'd like your comments as to whether or not you think this is sustainable or whether or not we could retest the lows.
It's not sustainable. I mean, it is. If it's a bubble, by definition, it's going to pop. And I do think the Fed has managed to reflate a housing bubble, but it's not the mirror image, you know, or of the housing bubble that burst. It's different in that I think this time around, it's the speculation has been confined really to the high end and to hedge funds and private equity funds that have purchased large quantities of single family homes for cash, not using mortgages, but for cash. Of course, some of the cash was borrowed, through the Fed system. But these are speculators buying up homes, hoping to flip them in the future, and in the meantime, renting them out. And I don't think it's going to work. I think they overpaid for the houses. They bought too many too quickly. Now you've got a glut of houses on the market, and it's much harder to rent a single-family house than an apartment. And the potential pool of tenants is not as great, especially with people losing their jobs and going from full-time to part-time and paying more for food and electricity. They can't afford to rent a big house. All they can afford is a little apartment. So you've got a lot of these houses that are vacant. A lot of them are being rented out for less money than the speculators thought. So what's happening now is the speculators are not buying in the market anymore. They've backed off because they realize they've overpaid. Meanwhile, they've driven prices up so high that it doesn't make sense anymore, even if you believed the rental assumptions. So now that the speculators are gone from the market, there's really no buyers left, because the whole time housing was going up, real buying was going away because home ownership rates have fallen to 20-year lows. And so Americans are renting now. And unfortunately, apartment rents in the last year in America are up 10%. That's, it's inflation that's not showing up in the CPI. But the problem for the Fed is now that you've got all these speculators out of the market, there's no buyers left. And the only thing keeping the housing market afloat is the fact that interest rates are at zero, and that the Fed is still buying mortgage-backed securities, although not quite as many as they were, but they're still the big buyer there. If the Fed were to let interest rates go up, then the market would implode. But even if it doesn't raise interest rates, I think that the market is still heading back down because the buyers are gone, the speculators are gone, and there's no real buyers at these prices. Even with mortgage rates as low as they are, most people can't afford to buy the homes at current prices. The prices have to come down.
That's a shadow inventory nightmare, reminiscent of the subprime inventory that we had looming over the market in 2008 all the way through 2012. What I find interesting about your point here, and I've been harping on it for months, it is the hedge funds, it is the institutional investors who have picked up these houses. But if you think we had an inventory problem in the past, you had real people in there with at least a little bit of skin in the game.
Here's the big difference. Here's the big difference. They don't have mortgages. So a lot of, when you own a property and you have a mortgage and the house is worth less than your mortgage, you really can't sell it because it's a short sale. You need to get permission from the bank. A lot of people just wrote it out. They sat in there even though they were underwater. They didn't do anything. But this is very different when a hedge fund that doesn't have a mortgage, that has an all-cash position in a piece of property, they have a lot of money on the table to lose. Like if you have a house and you put up a 5 or 10% down payment, the most you can lose is your 5 or 10% down payment, right? But if you buy a house for all cash, you've got 100% of your money at risk. And so what's going to happen is when real estate prices start to go down 10, 20, 30%, most people are already underwater and they're not going to sell. Maybe they'll walk away and there'll be a foreclosure, but even the banks might not sell the property. But if you're a hedge fund,
you've got to sell. It's a game of hot potato.
You just might blow out of it like it was a stock, cut and run, because you'll just hit the bid. You're just going to try to sell. And that's going to be the problem, because these hedge funds are not going to hold on to these losing houses. They don't live in them. They have no reason to own them. At least if you live in the house, you need a place to live. But if you just own the house and you don't live in it, you bought it as a trade, and the trade doesn't work out, you just sell. Cut your losses. So the amount of property that can hit the market is enormous. And, of course, if all these hedge funds try to get out the door at the same time, who's going to buy?
Last thing as we wrap up here, I keep trying to wrap up, but you keep bringing up great points. If a mainstream pundit was here taking the opposite side of your discussion, you know what they would say? They'd say, oh, but Peter, the Fed will come in with both guns blazing and they'll start buying up those toxic mortgage-backed securities again.
Great. That's what they're going to do. Unfortunately, that's what they're going to do, which is why we're buying gold, because they're not going to, they can see this. They're going to try to stop housing from imploding again because they don't want to bankrupt all the big banks that we bailed out. They built this whole phony recovery on the wealth effect of appreciating assets, they're not going to let it evaporate. That's why all this talk about tapering and an exit strategy is just talk. They can't do any of that. They're going to do more QE than ever. They're going to print. Who knows? The Fed might even start buying houses. I have no idea what they're going to do. But they're going to keep printing money. They're going to, you know, they're going to try to artificially prop up home prices by destroying the dollar and making the price of everything else go up to catch up with homes. What they're hoping is if they just print enough money that Americans will get raises and they might be able to afford these overpriced homes.
This is the walkaway point I want everyone to get is if you thought it was bad during the subprime debacle, at least those people had a vested interest in trying to remain in their homes. But this time the institutions have bought them up and they are going to need to get out of those cash deals as quickly as possible.
Especially, and see, this might have happened. Some of these institutions might have borrowed the money to buy these houses, not in the mortgage market, just if it's borrowed it, and they might get margin calls. They might have to pay back their loans, in which case they have to blow out of their houses. See, you can't get a mortgage call, a margin call on a mortgage. I mean, no matter how much your house goes down, the bank can't say, hey, we loaned you money to buy a house, and now the house is worth 20% less, so you need to repay the mortgage in full. But if you're a hedge fund and you paid cash for a house, but you borrowed it not in the mortgage market, but someplace else, and the lender has a contingency that says, hey, if that, you know, you have to have a certain amount of collateral for this loan, otherwise it's immediately due, right? So you could have margin calls where people are forced to sell.
Tell people how that they can find out more about your work, contact information, your show, Euro Pacific, and everything else going on over there.
Of course, I do my daily radio show weekdays, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, the Peter Schiff Show. You can listen at schiffradio.com. You can listen live, or you can just go to the site anytime and listen to the most recent show, or you can sign up and be a premium member. In fact, you can, you know, get a 30-day free trial on that. If you want to talk to my brokers about, you know, setting up a brokerage account, investing in foreign stocks and bonds, it's europac.net, EUROPAC.net is our website to get information. If you want to buy physical precious metals, it's shiffgold.com is my website, S-C-H-I-F-F-gold.com. And if you happen to live outside the United States and you want to buy gold or you want to invest or have a bank account, you can go to my offshore bank at Euro-Pacific Bank, europacbank.com. So I've got plenty of businesses out there to help people protect their wealth. And my most recent book, which I would recommend people pick up, is The Real Crash, America's Coming Bankruptcy, How to Save Yourself.
Outstanding. Well, we want to thank you so much for making time for us today.
Hey, anytime.